the Kiwi SDR receiver, and don't forget the receiver has its own, the BeagleBone computer. It will be small, it will be relatively low drain, and of course I have the additional drain of the wireless router. And again, when you buy a wireless router, it usually comes with a wall wart, but really the voltage powering it is 5 volts or 12 volts. So I want to put that in the car, I think. Let me look at 3FET, K2EIR, and I want to use a laptop in my apartment, and I think I will be able to control the receiver. That being said, the Kiwi SDR is not the most powerful or best SDR receiver. You might be able to do better for the money, but it does have the utility that you could create another station on this public network, and it's using the same standard interface that hundreds of other Kiwi receivers around the world are using, so the software is very easy to use. So that's the story. The only thing is I'm not very clear about how I would configure a router in the car, a wireless router, so the Kiwi SDR plugs into one port, and here in my apartment, I would tell the laptop to connect to that router. And of course, there are little problems like, do I have enough range? But I think a range extender at some part of my apartment might help me. So that's the whole long story. Sorry, Net Control. This is K2EIR.
W2TTT. K2BAR. Very good, Howie. That is super. So to answer your question, and I'm also going to answer a second question you didn't ask, but the one you asked about, how do I provide the connectivity, you could take two old, you know, Linksys routers. They typically run on 12 volts or 13.8 or whatever you got handy in the car, and they'll run just fine. I would load DDWRT code into them, and or mesh code, whichever you want, and build yourself a little mesh bridge across if you run mesh code. DDWRT, I think I'd run them in bridge mode between two of them. That would work just fine and dandy as well. And just build yourself a point-to-point link. You give them their own SSID, and they'll link up as long as they make the RF path. If something as cheap as an old pair of Linksys won't work, running DDWRT in either bridge mode or in with mesh code, what you could do, and by the way, I'd be happy to give you a couple to play with to do that if you don't have them. They're yours for the asking. The other approach would be to get a pair of nano stations. I might consider suggesting you buy them on either 2, 3, or 5 gig, 3 being more expensive, 5 being a little more expensive than the 2, and the 2, of course, being the cheapest. But, you know, for, you know, not too much money, you could either, again, set them up in bridge mode as they come out of the box, or you could run Arden code on them, and you could even screw with the SSID that they have so that nothing else would jump on the net. It could be Howie's little private world there of a mesh network in and around your condo. Because if anyone's not in the same RF domain, the SSIDs don't have to match unless you want them to. So that would work just fine. You know, you've got some options there. But I would start with something like a couple of Linksys WRT 54Gs, GLs, or GSs, and go from there with, you know, broadband hamnet code in them. And I think you'll do fine. Anybody else have any suggestions for Howie?
K2LAX.
Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of things, Howie. One is,
I also
So I run a maritime net, and I use remote web SDRs that are available free publicly that, you know, basically they've got 200 or 300 users can listen in on them, and they're all in the United States. I don't know how to, they're all IP addresses, and maybe I can send it to you, Gordon, and you can relay it, but you can listen to anybody anywhere around the world through these web SDRs, and it really helps the reception. The other thought I had was, I've dealt with noise problems in different places, and I've actually been pretty successful in using the MFJ noise canceling signal enhancer, I think they call it, which basically takes two antennas, and you have a short shortwave antenna, and then your antenna that you want to actually listen to, and they use phase shift to be able to get rid of the noise that is local. Over.
Yeah, you have a sampling, or what they call a donor antenna, and they compare the phase noise at that in the near field to the far field on the regular antenna, and away you go. Yeah, that's a good idea. And yeah, you know, SDR sites are in abundance. So yeah, sure. If you can send me those, I'll be happy to post them and to the group. I think that'd be just great. Thank you for that. The other question I didn't answer that Howie didn't ask, which was how are you going to keep these all this electronics happy? I'm assuming you're going to have an auxiliary battery. On that toasty, day when you're sitting inside your apartment and it's, you know, 5 degrees outside, and there's 3 feet of snow outside in Tarrytown, I'm thinking you're not going to want to go out and turn anything on. So what I'm thinking is, at least initially, you'll have some sort of, bless you, solar panel. Bless you, my wife is sneezing here. I'm thinking that you might want to have a very stout auxiliary battery set up, and that way you can run all the time. You can charge it off the vehicle when you run it. If you have a remote vehicle start, you can even recharge it without having to go outside. That'd be kind of cool, though idling your car is frowned upon in a lot of circles, so you consider that. There might even be laws against it. But another is that you just mount a solar panel, either on the roof or in the car, such that you get some solar energy to it, just to kind of at least top it up, or at least reduce the degradation of the charge on the battery, on the auxiliary battery. So, what are your thoughts, Howie? K2EIR. K2BAR.
NJ2BS. Repeat. Here is K2EIR. Okay. First of all, for K2LAX, I'm familiar with Web SDR. Kiwi SDR is another network. It's the same thing with a standard interface. And if you want to use any of their 100 or so receivers, I think the web address is kiwifdr.hu, Hotel Uniform. That's all. I think that's it. And in case I'm wrong, let me say I've already posted with some URLs about this receiver thing and this problem. So if you go there, you can sort of find the URLs on the internet and see more and go from there. Item two, I'm looking right at my MFJ noise canceling signal enhancer, and this worked fine where I used to live 6 years ago. But I have tried everything here, and I cannot get any improvement here. And I believe that basically I am in a box, and the phases are so mixed up. I believe all the power wiring here is radiating, and there is so many devices and so much noise, there is no way to phase it out. So I've tried that. I've tried movement settings. This is why I think I need to go to the setup in the car. So I think I've addressed K2LAX's suggestions. Thank you. Been there. Sort of done that. For you, Gordon, I think there's a much more simple way. I could use a small solar panel, but I believe smaller, you know, I don't know how yet how much load the drain that the routers will add, but the drain will not be too big otherwise. Again, I think it's going to be between 1.5 and 3 amps. The thing is, it'll be a big drain if you leave it on all the time, but how about a remote on-off switch? How would I do that? I've mentioned that before in connection with hands-free push-to-talk. I already have in my possession somewhere here that I've never implemented, like so many projects never implemented. You can buy these little keyless entry modules where, just like your keyless entry to your car, you have a little keychain fob which will fit in your hand, and you have a little receiver at the car, and you can send codes which turn... I think I just timed out. You can send codes which turn your system on and off. So it only has to be on while you're listening. I think I could use lithium packs, rechargeable lithium packs, and swap them, put one in there, have another one in the house, or three in the house that are charging, and I don't expect any big problem. Adding a small solar panel so it charges when at other times, that's fine, but I'm thinking I want to keep size small. Back to you, Net Control. If you want, let K2LAX make any comments. K2EIR.
Yeah, it's excellent. I had forgotten about the key fob idea. That's excellent. John? K2LAX, did you want to make any further comments? I think John's having trouble accessing the repeater at this time. All right, anything from anybody else on this topic?
You lost his audio.
Yeah, John, you lost your audio again. Yeah, one time sometimes he's really super, and the next time he's gone. All right, John, we'll come back to you. Anybody else? Okay, this is a really good idea. There's lots of cheap latching key fobs. And, you know, ones with separate on and off buttons. And you know, Howie, if you do have a remote key start on your car, you know, you could conceivably bolster the charge on the auxiliary battery when you need to for short periods of time. You know, if your town has a 2-minute rule or a 5-minute rule, whatever, for idling vehicles, you just comply with that and go from there. You know, turn it on, turn it off, you know, turn it back on in a half hour. I mean, you'd be amazed how much current you can dump from an alternator into a battery that wants it in a 5-minute period. Probably enough to run at least 30 minutes, if not 60, in the configuration you're talking about. So you could do that too. So that's great. Anything else, Howie?
No, I might pick you up someday. You know, I talk about these things and think about them, but it's a long time until I get around to actually doing things. I have such a backlog, especially right now with the pain. It just keeps me from doing anything. But, yeah, I might just buttonhole you for your expertise to come over and see if we can get this going. I will ask this question. Why not just one router? Again, I saw something that said buy a cheap, I forgot the brand, Netgear, 8P/ router. And I think by 8P you meant access point. Many of these routers can be configured as an access point, as bridges, etc. I'm just, haven't ever done that. I'm just trying to think why, if the QESDR is in one port, maybe even the internet port, and my laptop here is got a wireless facility, why can't my laptop think of the router and what it's connecting to, just like it does with the router here in the apartment, and why can't I connect that way? Just control the Kiwi from indoors with the laptop and hear the audio as I do now. Again, when I say as I do now, I'm using other Kiwi receivers around the world. K2EIR.
Okay, very good, Howie. Alrighty. John, you want to try it again? Maybe you fixed your audio. But you have not fixed your audio. Sorry. We'll come back to you. Those are all good things. So the APs are, can sometimes be put in bridge mode. And so you can have two APs talking to each other. So that basically creates a point-to-point circuit. So that would work just fine. Some routers have an AP mode or a bridge mode. And again, you would give them a dedicated SSID for essentially a point-to-point or a point-to-multipoint circuit, or a multipoint-multipoint type circuit, depending on how you want to do it and the technology that you used to use in the Wi-Fi core behind the transceiver. So, DDWRT solves a lot of problems, and you can jolly well feel welcome to do that. Keep that in mind. And there's some differences according to the hardware you might have. It is an option to consider. All right, anything else on this topic?
K2EIR, I'll just say that, again, if people go to the comm group, if they're able to, see my post, they can follow the links and they actually can see, or do a search on Amazon for Kiwi SDR, and they actually can see those two boards, the Kiwi SDR on top of the BeagleBone green board, BBG for short. Again, it sells for about $300. You can see how hugely small this is. And if you go to sdr.hu, you can actually use the standard software there and access any of maybe 100 receivers and listen. K2EIR.
Just curious, with the daughter board in question, what's the frequency range on the receiver?
The Kiwi SDR is from BLF, something very low, up to 30 megahertz.
That's very nice. Okay. Very good. Anybody else have anything for Howie?
K2LAX, any copy?
Yes, John, you're good. Go.
I'm sorry about that. I'm running like three radios with a computer, and I think they're getting mixed up. Over.
Well, that's funny. Love to hear about that configuration on another night. But, okay, any your comment?
No, the only thing I was going to say to Howie is electrical interference problem is a real bummer, and it's too bad.
And it's not uncommon, it's increasingly affecting licensed and common consumer services. And it's usually coming from one consumer device or industrial device to another. We'll talk about that another night. Anything else on this topic, gentlemen?
One thing, Howie, have you done the complete, putting ferrets on everything that's going in and out of your radios?
Sorry, I missed the word there. Have I just done blank everything on my radio? Maybe if you've got that, Gordon, you can rebroadcast.
Have you done a complete analysis of all the signals going in and each cable that's going in and out of your radios and or other equipment around your radios?
Let's put it this way. I've turned off all the power in the apartment. Even unplugged UPSs, et cetera, and listened. I've checked if you disconnect the antenna, it's gone. I've tried different antennas. I've tried toroidal cords on things. that's not to say that if I got to every wire everywhere, I can take care of it. But I just don't think it's in my apartment itself. It's in the wiring of the walls and elsewhere. It's there. It's RF. You know, the theory, you know, the FCC is now tendering that we can build the receivers to neutralize the interference just isn't working for me. It's all over, and you can't. There are some specific areas of the spectrum which are much worse than others, but it's noise, and many people, as Gordon said, many people are experiencing this. It isn't as easy to get rid of as one might think.
No, I don't expect it would be. No, what I had said was I've got ferret magnets around every single cord that goes in and out of everything in my shack. Over.
Yeah, I have a lot of toroids that I've tried on an experimental basis because my shack is pretty simple. I can keep it down to one rig, and I have batteries. I can operate off. I operate off batteries, so it's not a question of hooking up or shielding or filtering from the power supplies. The power supplies are off. I can operate from DC. What I've also seen before, again, I did it at not my location, but a neighbor's, another hand. I hooked up his radio in the fixed station with coax to a ham stick, walked out from his shack, because his shack is adjoining his deck doors at the ground level, walked on the grass, and as I got away from his condo, like 25 feet, the noise went from S9 in this case down to S2. So that's the kind of problem it is, K2EIR.
Okay, yeah. That's totally understandable. And so frustrating. All right, anything else on this topic from anybody else? All right, Howie, any final remarks?
There was something in my mind, but I won't belabor things because I can't remember it right now.
All right, we'll reserve the Go Box conversation for a couple of weeks, and that'll be just fine, too. All righty. Well, everybody, I want to thank everyone for their participation tonight. I need to run off and wish everybody happy Easter and solemn Passover and Good Friday, and just be kind and be wonderful to everyone around you. That's best advice I can give you. And go do good, as they say. 73, and beware of really bad things you're going to read about or hear about or practical jokes on Sunday. Never mind it's Easter. It's also April Fool's Day. So do keep that in mind. So 73, everybody, and have a blessed evening. This is K2BAR, W2TTT, going QRT and transitioning from the car into the house after a very, very long day. I have to be up early tomorrow because I'm working and also doing scouting stuff for my scout troop. It's going to be on a 20-mile hike. So 73, W2TTT.
Take care of yourself, Gordon. Thanks for letting me have all this time. K2EIR.
Thank you for bringing cool stuff to the game. W2TTT, K2BAR clear.
W2TTT from N2MH, high and by.
Hey, Mark, I'm going to give you a phone call in about 10 minutes, all right?
Yep, that'll be fine.
Thank you. I was thinking about you earlier tonight, and happy Easter to you and Karen. W2TTT, be right back. I just got to get into the house and upstairs. W2TTT clear.
Okay, we were out earlier tonight, and I just remembered about the net, so sorry I wasn't here earlier. Talk to you later, W2TTT. This is N2MH West Orange.
NJ2BS, repeat. NJ2BS, repeat.
T2CGW mobile. W2UHF repeater. This is an open repeater system.
NJ. repeat.
Good morning, good morning, W2TGG.
This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4.
W2TGG and 2BGX.
Good morning, Charlie, and 2BGX, W2TGG. How are you this fine morning?
I'm doing okay. I was looking forward to a little bit of the Go Box talk here last night, because I actually built a couple of them.
Yeah, sorry about that, but it was after 10. It was after 10. I was in the car and couldn't take a health break, so I just needed to end the net. I can talk about it a little bit. So, are you familiar with the stackable, you know, DeWalt system? They have two kinds of carts, and they even have a wall stacking system for vehicles and shops.
No, I was actually going to look for those. I was going to tell you, I had to jump away from the net there before you finished. I didn't even know if you covered it or not. No need to apologize, sir.
Yeah. Well, let's see. How do I describe all this? So, I'm trying to remember what the part number is, because I used to have the part number in my head. You know, there's different stackable systems by a couple of the tool manufacturers, and there seems to be about the best, with the most options and things like that. And you kind of have to look carefully, but they have some really neat stuff. The system that I use has, you know, the wheels embedded in the large bucket on the bottom with kind of like a pull-up handle, sort of like luggage. And then it's got clips on the top, and you can stick another box on top or another box. You can stick several of them. They have a medium-sized box, which I was not discussing, which for a lot of people might be really nice to use for like a more comprehensive station go kit kind of thing. But they have these other ones. I guess they're about 6-7 inches high, and they come in various internal configurations. But you know, with that in mind, what do you call it? I have one that has some compartments in the interior of the lid for things like, you know, small parts and such, and drill bits and blades and things like that. But you can use it for cables and other small components, and that's what I've done. But in the bottom of my case, I have mounted an IP phone, a smart IP switch, and two mesh nodes, one on 5 gigs, which is meant to be very local, meaning just a, you know, maybe a few hundred feet at the most. And that kind of stays in the bottom, and it's just buried with its antenna in the box. And it basically there is to provide quick access to each other if you have your mesh nodes, if your other mesh nodes are also on other frequencies. Allows them to immediately, you know, configure across the network if they're in reasonable proximity. And then the other one is a nano station, and I cut away some of the support structure from the lid and embedded that in there with some 3M dual lock. And so the antenna is facing away from you, not toward you, which is a good thing. But the other aspect of it that's kind of cool is that because the face of it has a couple of dual lock pads, it's removable, and you can just put an extension cable on it
and mounted on a pole up high if you need to get your signal further away on 2 gigs, and that's a good thing as well. And then there's a third port on the switch for a third device if you want, but that's for whatever. And I've got Edison power poles in there for power distribution on all this stuff, and I have a Cradle Point CBA 850 cellular modem in there as well, so that way it has internet access for you right there. And I'm in the process of embedding a Raspberry Pi or two for, you know, purposes to be determined. And there'll be some other things too. I haven't decided yet. Maybe, definitely a DMR hotspot.
Well, I actually built two of them. I built a kind of a micro one that was built in one of the plastic ammo boxes from Harbor Freight. That basically has a 7 amp hour battery and a solar charger. And I fitted the lid with USB ports and cigarette lighter adapters, which is, I guess, the accessory adapters we call today. And I built another one with basically, it's kind of like a sportsman waterproof case, kind of like for fishing and stuff. And I have two 7 amp hour batteries with a power meter, and it also has a solar charger in it. And I have the ability to turn on both batteries or one, and, you know, keep one in reserve. But I was actually thinking of looking for something to make some sort of an antenna mast, something to maybe bring up a UHF, VHF antenna, maybe about 10 feet, maybe something collapsible, something that I can store in it.
Well, that's a great idea. So what you built basically is a more power-focused one. So to your point about the sportsman things, I use an MTM case guard box. Not the big Pegasus one, but the tall one that looks like an ammo box, but it's wider than ammo box, you know, normal ammo box, in orange. And that has, right now, one battery. It wasn't lift, but it's got 318 amp hour steel lead acids, and I'm going to replace that either with two, you know, to reduce it to two, or, you know, put in maybe a 35 ampere hour one. It's got a solar charger built into it, two USB dual 2.1 ports that are switchable so that way they don't create vampire current issues. I have the solar charger has a couple of 5-volt ports inside, so I'm thinking about running either an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi to wirelessly control the beast, should that become of interest. I have an internal rig runner knockoff from China that they use for all the internal connections. It's a little 8-position guy that's tiny, has no tabs. It's really nice, actually. And then I have what do you call it? On the other side, I have, like you said, an accessory port on it. I also have a direct, I mounted a white and black power pole on the outside of the case, and that's where the solar panel can go in. Yeah, because it's meant for 20 volts or 22 volts, something like that, from a solar panel. But more importantly, if you don't have that, I have a buck boost in the case that you can grab, and you can take standard 12 or 15 volt power and boost it up to 19 volts so that you can actually charge it that way. The other way is you can go in through the accessory port with a dongle that I have, you know, an accessory dongle at the mail with a power pole on the other side of it at you know, again, 12 to 15 volts. And you can push the power into it that way, directly to the batteries, and bypass the controller, because, as you know, SLAs can be pretty much self-regulating in a pinch. So yeah, I've got all that nonsense, and there's all sorts of metering on there as well, as you can imagine, both on the input side and on the load side, so I can kind of keep track of things.
Yeah, I have the big bill box under my desk. I just pulled it out. It's a cicada. It's a Plano, P-L-A-N-O. I built these mostly for power situations, to get a cell phone charge or to bring a handy talkie up.
Yeah, one of the things I decided, pardon me, to do is to separate the power requirements from the fuel radio, and I'll use that word loosely, radio requirements. So, you know, power is one kind of box, and this is something else. My next power box, and again, it's subject to adequate funding, is probably going to be a 30, 40, or 50 ampere hour, box that will probably go into a DeWalt case that will match the one I first described, and that way I can stack them together and wheel them in, and that way you have a generous power source, and away you go. That's kind of the thought stream I'm going through now, and you either plug it into an AC line, you can plug it into a solar panel or whatever, and go from there.
Yeah, if you're going to go lead acid, you're definitely going to need wheels on that. I was thinking of lithium ion phosphate batteries, but I don't know. I think that the charging requirements are going to be weird, and I can't find anything easily modifiable, easily tweakable that I could put in there for the solar controller.
Okay, if I didn't make that clear, and the DeWalt one that I will make in the future, that's going to be lithium. Not steel lead acid. I may have misspoken, so forgive me. But the idea is to make it stackable and equally light. So to your question about chargers, BioNO Power sells several different kinds of chargers along the lines of what K2LAX was doing, and I have them, actually. He didn't describe them. I was on the phone last night with Mark, N2MH, later after the net, on some other matters, but we digressed to that, too. And I have an MPPT charger. Looks like the cheap Chinese chargers, but it's not cheap and it's not Chinese. Well, it is probably Chinese, but it's different in that it's meant for the lithium batteries as opposed to SLAs or, you know, other lead chemistry batteries. So that works. And, of course, you know, you can get the standard AC charger as well. You know, most of the time, if you have a more high current application, you can run, let's say, a 6 or a 10 amp, AC charger, you know, a little cable wart thingy, to feed your battery, and leave that in the circuit while you're operating your 100 watt radio and miscellaneous accessories. I mean, you can do that without any problem at all.
Yeah, I just looked up BioNO Power. It looks like they got some neat stuff. Thanks for the lead on that. I've been using the batteries that they put in UPSs. Actually, I started with, he had swapped out a whole bunch of UPS batteries at work, and some of them were still quite good, and I just adopted them, let's say.
Yep, absolutely. And over the years, I've actually bought 18 ampere hour SLAs and 12 ampere hour SLAs. You know, 12 ampere hour SLAs look like short, stout bricks, and the 18 ampere hour ones look more like sometimes they're 20s, but same idea. They look like a really heavy encyclopedia volume. They're kind of skinny and tall and a little wide. Not thick, but wide. And that works out really well. So, that's something to consider as you go through. But they're heavier, and as I say, I put three of those into a steroidal toolbox from MTM Case Guard, and I regret putting three in. Two would have been fine, but that was a little less than I wanted, and they were heavier than I suspected. So so lugging that puppy around is brutal. So at some point I'm going to, you know, rework that. I'll put in another lead chemistry battery in there, but a single one. And I'll rework the 18s into smaller kits for mount. I like 18s for running mesh nodes at the fair, because we can leave the nodes deployed and then just drive around and pick up the batteries and recharge them overnight and then redeploy them the next day. And they'll run for, you know, 12 or more hours, no problem. Depending on what you have on there. But if you have a camera and a mesh node, it's no big deal. Or two mesh nodes, it's no big deal.
I'd actually love to pick your brain on the mesh nodes. It's one of those technologies that have been fascinating me for a while.
Yeah. Whoops. We use the Arden, ARDN.org software. And Bob's up on 442. We use that stuff. And it's good on 900, 2.4, 3.4, and then 5 gig. And all of those have handband only segments, which are wonderful. You just have to be careful as to how you deploy them. But it works abundantly well.
Okay, so we have handband only mesh nodes. That's kind of cool.
Right, I mean, you can drive them into the part 15 band, especially where they're overlapping, and you can drive them beyond where they're only part 15, but then you have to behave yourself in what do you do for power and such. Not that anybody's looking, but, you know, why would you want to be where there's public Wi-Fi of any kind, or, you know, personal consumer Wi-Fi? Just get away from all that crap. So, for instance, the units in question with our software will, you know, the raster for 2 gigs is 5 megs. And if you take channel 1 and you go 5 meg below it, that's a virtual channel 0, which you cannot select because of weirdness of what happens when you select 0 in some people's software. But you can select minus 1 and minus 2 and still be in the handband. So we allow for that in the code, and what's nice about that is that now you're 15 megahertz down from the channel 1 center, and you're maybe 5, maybe 10 megs wide instead of 20. So you pick up 3 to 6 dB of gain, and you have a reduced noise floor because you're away from all that channel 1 noise.
Okay, so you use these things to link Wi-Fi networks together, I mean, you know, Ethernet networks together?
We use them to link each other, these nodes together, and then if you want to add standard Wi-Fi access points to that, that's a separate decision. Some people just plug into these devices directly with whatever their equipment is, or a switch or a router or whatever, to provide additional services. But, you know, fundamentally we have these set up so that, you know, they basically, let's say you and I are both mesh nodes, and we have a common RF space between us, as we have a path between us. So we create a network with a common name. In this case, we'll call it Arden 12345. And as long as I see Arden 12345 on your node and you see Arden 12345 on my node, they'll make a link, and then what they will do is they will exchange routing tables. Who do I hear? Who do you hear? So you will now know who I hear, and you'll add that to your tables, and vice versa. And now, stations we each can hear, but, you know, can't hear past us, can then in turn route to you and to people behind you.
Okay, that makes sense. What kind of distance do you get with this?
Oh, that depends, and I'm not being coy here, but it's ridiculous. So if you have clear line of sight in a quiet place, you can go 50 miles. have low rolling hills, foliage buildings, and other crap. You go as far as the largest fat structure, the largest absorbent structure that you run into.
And what routers do you usually flash to get this?
So most of the code, the modern code that has all the bug fixes and things like that, is in the Ubiquiti software. We run the Arden software. Basically, is a derivation of DDWRT, which then with the mesh parts only, including a thing called an OLSR module, a visual least cost routing module. We also run, what's the other company? It's not Microtech. I wish it was Microtech. They're expensive, though, but they're nice. No, there's another company. I'm drawing a blank, but, fundamentally, Ubiquiti is the choice. We don't support every Ubiquiti product. We support a lot of them. And there's some hand-waving you have to go through to get the code into it. It's not just simply, have the Arden module and, go to the admin screen and do an upgrade and flash it with the latest upgrade that happens to be Arden, and away you go. It varies a little bit depending on how you're doing it. You can do it that way for some code. Other code has to be, you have to downgrade because they use a different memory map in the newer code of Ubiquiti. So sometimes you have to go from, let's say you have a 5.6 or 5.8 code, you have to, retro the software back to 5.5. That gives you a common memory map to what the Arden folks are using, so you don't create chaos in the box. And then what you do is then you load the Arden code. You can do that either through an admin screen or through a TFTP feed, either or.
Yeah, I was just looking on the Arden.org website. It looks like they support TP-Link as well, which might be at a better price point than the Ubiquiti stuff. I think the Ubiquiti stuff is pretty hefty price-wise.
Yeah, there are some minor problems, just logistically. What we've done in order to make up for that little detail is you go up on eBay and buy used stuff. There's a ton of WiMAX vendors and people who are upgrading their corporate Wi-Fi who have created a fairly steady population of surplus 2 and 5 gig Ubiquiti gear.
Anybody out there? Since you see the client or we got
W228F repeater. This is open repeater.
Do you know why you're hearing that?
Check out there, we definitely hear you.
No, he doesn't hear us. The WTUHF repeater, this repeater used to be part of a system of linked repeaters. And they've improved their repeater down there in the last couple of months. And my link receiver is turned on and I just can't find the codes to turn it off. But more importantly, it never mattered because A, the relieves on the trees, and B, the repeater wasn't improved. But more importantly, in normal times, not only would we not communicate, we had no reason to think we would hear them on the link receiver. We are because of the antenna, the 440 link antenna, was sheared off years ago. So you're hearing it on a broken off antenna mount.
Alrighty. Thought he was out there. Never mind. W2TGT, this is F2VGX. Yeah, it looks like it might be a squeaky little thing over here to downgrade firmware and then put in the code and stuff. But I think it's kind of neat. I think that, if you get a nice Yagi, you might be able to really make this more distance too.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So, not all models of a particular, all versions of a particular model are created equal. So there's, was XW and I forget what the other version is, XM and XW.
code and slightly different hardware architectures and things. What was funny is, not like in the nanostations, the newer nanostations, I forget which port is which, so forgive me, they have two Ethernet ports. And people are bitching and moaning, oh, I put it up on the top of the mountain or top of the tower, and I have to run two cables down or put a switch up on the, up on the tower, and that's another, risky component to put up in the air, blah, blah, blah. Or I have to run a second cable down because I want to put things on its port. So it's got the WAN port, and it's got the LAN port. And, what's humorous is that the WAN port is also the port you use for putting nodes back to back so that you can hardwire them, from one band to another or one frequency to another. But to me, having the LAN port separately allows you the luxury of using a dumb switch on that port to add multiple components if you want to. So I'm viewing it as an advantage. It's kind of funny. So much so that, like, if you want to have a linked node between, let's say you want to have 2 gigs going one way and 5 gigs going another way, but you also want to put a camera at that spot, you can do that because you can, simply tie the two nodes back to back on one port, and the LAN port can have the camera. And if you have one on 2 gigs and one on 5 gigs like that, you can put two cameras up there, and everybody's happy. I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, it all depends on how you, what your application is, or what, as to whether something is a feature or a challenge.
Yeah, it sounds really, really interesting. I mean, it's something I'd like to experiment with, I think.
Yeah, so just FYI, the LAN ports are all, default to VLAN 1, which is what everything uses throughout the entire universe in the simplistic world. Back-to-back, we've decided to use VLAN 2, so that if you have two nodes back-to-back, they'll do that. The WAN port is also, pardon me, yeah, if you want to make it an internet connection, it's also VLAN 1 by definition. So that works. What else is there? Oh, and you can change the VLAN to something else if you want. You don't have to do it on the node. You just plug it into a switch that knows about VLANs, and you're good to go. So that you can have separate DHCP spaces. These nodes support NAT. One port or one address DHCP, 5 address DHCP, and 13 address DHCP, and you don't want to have it glom onto more IP addresses than necessary, because basically the way the IP addresses are generated, they're generated from the MAC address, and an array of IP addresses is calculated to create that. So it's 10.x.y.z. And that's how those are created on your LAN side. So that way, all your different devices should have a statistical probability of not running into each other.
That was really neat. That's absolutely fascinating. All right, Duke. My wife just got out of bed, so I'm going to go and make us some breakfast. So I'm going to wish you a 73 and have yourself a great day and a safe day and a good holiday. And we'll catch you later.
Okie doke. Well, I'm in Santa Fly, and I'm just chilling out here. The first time I've seen the church lit up before we got here. They have LED lighting, so it's probably not costing as much as it used to. They decided to leave the church all lit up. It looks pretty. Our Boy Scout troop is walking 20 miles on a church hike today, and giving a couple of talks. One on the Road of Sorrows, if you will, the Via Doloroso, and then another talk on the Transubstantiated Eucharist, which I give to the boys in a Greek Orthodox church, actually a Greek Orthodox cathedral, so kind of showing the unity of Christianity, and the centrality of Christ himself, so, kind of sacrifice. That's kind of neat. Anyway, take care and God bless and bon appetit. N2VZX, W2TTT.
NJ2BS, repeat. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4. This is the NJ2BS repeater. Use PL151.4.